Chapter 16. Styles still doesn't want Jennifer at the den, and Fang doesn't want to go to the station again because it smells of many things, all of them noisome. Styles wonders where he learned that word. Tom suggests going to the Argent house, since Chris probably knows more about strategy than the rest of them anyway. The others agree. Tom calls Chris. Since when are they so buddy-buddy? Styles wonders, and they head over. Once Styles is back in the Jeep, with nobody but Cora and Derek for company, he says to Derek, "Would you rather I drop you off at the den?" "No," Derek says. "I can handle being in a room with her, as long as she doesn't get too close." "Okay." Styles doesn't like it, but hell, he can't coddle Derek. And to be fair, he wants him close. When he gets to the Argent house, Allison is there, and he hugs her for what feels like an hour. Separation from the pack is always difficult for him. Separation when bad things are happening is practically impossible. It occurs to him, somewhat belatedly, that he hopes they're no longer being surveilled. It seems like Fang was primarily responsible for that, and obviously Ennis and JC aren't doing it at the moment. So unless Deucalion is doing it himself, he supposes that they're probably safe. In deference to Fang, who Styles knows will be uncomfortable in a house that smells like silver and gun oil, and partially because it's a large gathering, they head to the backyard. It's warm out, but there's ample shade and a nice breeze. Victoria provides lemonade, gifts the entire assembly with her laser stare, and then goes back into the house. "So what are we looking at?" Styles asks Chris.
"I've seen worse," Chris says,
setting a stack of blueprints out on the table they're gathered around.
"The loft has a large metal door, and then almost one entire wall of windows. There's a spiral staircase up to the second floor, and then part of that overlooks the main floor."
"Excellent," Allison says. "I know where I'll be." Chris nods at her.
"The major problem will be getting in. An ambush is virtually impossible. We have to come in through the door."
"Can we get in while it's empty?"
Tom asks. Styles looks at Fang. "You might be able to help with that." Fang tips his head to one side.
"Deucalion might leave, but Ennis is injured. He won't leave the den."
"I bet he would if we sent part of Felicia," Jennifer says. Half the table shudders, including Styles, but he also nods. "That's not a bad idea, actually. Would they leave to rescue her if they thought she was being held captive?" Fang thinks this over. Styles is starting to realize why some people treat him as stupid. He always has to take a moment or two when asked a question. It's not a matter of intelligence. It's a matter of translation.
"Given the last few days, yes, Tsukiko is dead. Ennis and JC both injured. He would not want to lose anyone else. And he would be furious to learn you've taken her captive, had you done so."
"Okay." Now Styles takes a moment to think. Our one real advantage here is that we know what Duke's plan is going to be. When the others give him a questioning look, he tilts his chin towards Derek. "He's going to want to make me suffer. Especially if we leave him Felicia's head to find. He'll go for Derek." Fang nods.
"Yes, he has mentioned this."
"I'm the first person in a long time to get the better of Duke, in even a small way," Styles says. "Not only did I kill one of his precious collection, I kicked my way in the door of his den to do it. He doesn't want to kill me right now. He wants to hurt me. And to do that, he'll go for Derek. We can use that to create an opening."
"How so?" Chris asks.
"If he goes for a Derek who isn't Derek," Allison says, immediately seeing where Styles is going with this. "Jennifer's already created good illusions of a couple pack members. If she can create one of Derek, Duke will think he's got a human shield when instead he'll be holding a doll we won't give half a damn about." "Yeah, but there's a problem with that," Styles says, "which is that she," he points at Jennifer, is never getting her witchy little paws on Derek ever again, so that isn't happening.
Jennifer sighs.
I think it would be pretty clear by now that I don't have any interest in him that way, or in any man. Bisexuality exists, you know,
Styles tells her.
That's not the point. I don't give a flying fuck about whether or not you actually have any interest in him. You're never touching Derek again. Are we clear?
Jennifer lifts her hands in surrender. Styles takes a moment to clear the red blur out of his vision.
But the premise is still good. Using Derek as some sort of lure, diversion, etc.
Thus proceeds a long round of strategizing, putting different plans on the table and inevitably deciding they won't work. Styles hates every plan they come up with, because all of them end with Derek invariably in actual danger. Chris points out several times, his temper thinning each time, that they can't use Derek as bait without some danger to Derek. But Styles thinks that there must be some way. It doesn't help that Fang is completely tactless as a general rule, listens to every plan, and then states matter-of-factly, and then Deucalion will kill him. After a frustrating hour, Styles says, look, maybe we can convince him someone else is Derek? He gets a round of skeptical stares and says, dude, the guy is blind. There must be some way to exploit that. Warming to his topic, he continues, Fang, Derek and I smell a lot alike, right? Several people tense at this obvious implication that Styles intends to be the bait himself. But before anyone can protest, Fang replies, yes, you have a joint smell much of the time. You smell of Styles and Derek. There are differences, but they are slight.
So if I wore Derek's clothes and used Derek's shampoo and he used mine, then someone could be convinced that we were each other, right?
Styles says, and Fang nods.
Because, I mean, it's not like Duke knows us really well. He's met Derek all of twice, and me three times. Once there was smoke, once a lot of blood, or fake blood, whatever. We're both the same size, and he's never physically laid his hands on either of us. If we could mess up his sense of smell and hearing even a little, that would probably be enough.
That actually wouldn't be that hard, Chris says somewhat reluctantly. We could use a sonic pulse emitter. That would tip him off that we were intentionally messing with his hearing, Tom points out. What about a shotgun? Fire a shotgun close enough and all he'd smell is the cordite, and it would distort his hearing at least for a minute.
Hell yeah! A shotgun is exactly what we need, and easy enough to come up with a valid reason to use it near him. I mean, I'd be up to shoot Ennis a few more times,
Styles says.
And then we, wait for it, once he grabs me, then we can have Jennifer use me to do her witchy witchcraft instead of Derek.
He's quite proud of this plan, really. He thinks it covers all the bases. It's clear that nobody else likes it. Well, that's not true. Jennifer is giving a nod, like she can work with this, and Fang doesn't seem to care one way or another. At least he's not saying, and then Deucalion will kill you, like he has every other time. But Tom, Chris, Allison, and Derek are all giving him identical looks that are a mix of skepticism, disapproval, and long-suffering resignation.
So let me get this straight, Chris says. You won't allow Jennifer to have a hair from Derek so she can use him, the actual focus of Deucalion's attention, but you're fine with her having one from you?
Yes,
Styles says, and glares at Chris. Tom scrubs a hand through his hair.
I suppose we should just be grateful you're not trying to poison yourself again.
Styles brightens.
Hey, you know?
No, several voices say simultaneously.
Well, fine, be that way,
Styles says. They stay at the Argent House for another hour discussing details. Finally, everything is covered, not only to Styles' satisfaction, but to Chris's, who holds much more exacting standards. Far too many of Styles' plans involve all hell breaks loose, as an actual step for Chris's comfort. Tom and Derek are likewise thrilled to have a plan without, and then we take Stiles to the hospital, listed. When? Stiles finally says.
Now,
Fang stands.
Now?
Stiles sputters despite himself.
Chris nods. The sooner, the better. JC has probably gotten back to Deucalion's den and told him that the last he saw, Felicia was facing down a pretty pissed off alpha, two betas, and a human with inexplicably dangerous weapons and very good aim. Since she hasn't gotten back, Deucalion already knows that she's dead or captured.
Jesus!
Stiles gets up as well.
I need to get back to the den and take a quick shower with Derek's soap then.
I need to get some things together, Chris says. We don't want to rush this. We'll have Jennifer deliver the message and give Deucalion a time and place to meet us. Let's give ourselves 2 hours to prepare. Then, once Deucalion has left their den, we'll take our positions.
Sounds good to me,
Stiles says, and lets out a breath.
This is good, he thinks. One way or another, everything will be over by the time the moon sets. And that, he can handle.
The Hale House has 3 different showers, in deference to how many teenagers wake up there on any given day. So both Derek and Stiles are able to duck into the shower without it being a problem. Stiles gets out first and dresses in one of Derek's most well-worn Henleys and a pair of jeans. They're loose on him, but a belt holds them up fine. He goes downstairs to find his father in the kitchen, waiting for him. Cora is in the yard, he sees, practicing her katas. He wants to bake, but knows that it will change his scent, and forces himself to have tea instead of coffee, because he's already jittery enough. The sheriff is sitting at the kitchen table, calmly reassembling the shotgun he's going to be carrying. Since silence has never been Stiles' forte, he starts a conversation.
You were pretty badass today, Dad,
he says, trying not to think about the way his heart had been in his mouth the entire time.
What can I say? Tom replies. Your old man's been working out.
Stiles considers that for a few minutes.
Yeah, he finally says. You have. But it's more than that. You and Chris working on cases behind my back, Chris teaching you how to fight werewolves. I guess you've been spending a lot of time together, huh?
He's been showing me the ropes, yeah, his father agrees, and there's tension in his voice that it takes Stiles a minute to pin down.
Is this about what happened with Matt? He finally asks, and his father's stony expression is answer enough.
Dad, it wasn't...
I know, Tom says wearily. Stiles, I do know that it wasn't my fault. Matt is 100% responsible for his own actions, but that doesn't change the fact that I watched you get hurt, nearly killed, and there was nothing I could do to stop it. I can't change what happened, but I don't want anything like it to ever happen again.
Stiles lets out a shaky breath. He hasn't really thought about this, hasn't thought about the impact of his injury on anyone else. He'd been preoccupied with the recovery, focused on that, as his father would no doubt say he should have been. And he had noticed that his father had been a little clingy. But that seemed normal to him, really. He was used to clinginess from the pack, particularly after he had been hurt. He hadn't really thought about the fact that his father wasn't normally like that. Not in the same way.
Have you talked to anyone about this?
He finally ventures. Tom glances over and gives him a wry smile.
Yes, mandatory psychological counseling in the aftermath of having killed Matt, if nothing else.
I'm not sure that counts,
Stiles says, since his father hadn't actually killed Matt, and that was precisely what was bothering him.
Not really, no, his father agrees, but I knew I needed to talk to someone. So yes, I talked to Chris. He knows at least a little of what it's like, since Allison's been injured once or twice, with your pack or on a hunt. And since he and I are going to have to work together closely while you're at school, it seemed as good a time as any to get to know him a little better.
That makes sense, Stiles says. So he,
he's been teaching you the tricks of the trade? Well, the water balloon was inspired by you, Tom says, slightly amused, and reaches over to tousle Stiles' hair.
I still can't believe they didn't search you,
Stiles says, glad to lighten the mood. You know as well as I do that fighting someone isn't just about physicality, Tom replies. It's about understanding your opponent. I'm just a mere human. A hunter or even a human belonging to a pack, they would have searched. But not me. Stiles nods. Arrogance is the real downfall of this alpha pack. Arrogance is why Deucalion believes he's killed off a third of his pack already. Kid, this plan of yours? Stiles sighs.
You hate it.
In a word, yes. Tom shrugs. Logistically, it's sound. But Jennifer's going to turn on you the minute Deucalion is dead. Are you prepared for that?
I'm making arrangements for Jennifer, Stiles says. And he is. He's already called Lorelei again and given her an update on the situation. He's not particularly worried about her ability to get there in time. He's not exactly sure who or what Lorelei is, but she had turned up pretty much immediately for Cassidy, and he doubts this will be different.
Tom gives him a sideways look. Then he nods and decides against asking for details. Okay. An hour later, they've left the den. Cora is yet again scoffing at Stiles' baseball bat. He doesn't bother to tell her that he beat Callie Steele with it, and a number of other supernatural nasties. He likes his baseball bat, but he probably won't have much use for it in this particular situation. He's bringing the big guns with him this time, and as far as he's concerned, if Chris and Jennifer want to kill every alpha standing except him and Fang, he'll just stand back and applaud. I like not being the muscle, he says, and Derek gives a snort of laughter despite himself. They park about a block away from the loft that's been rented and walk there in silence. Chris and Allison are already there. They have to wait for Jennifer, but she arrives on schedule. Fang is with Deucalion, having gone straight back after their meeting. By now, Deucalion will have found Felicia's body. Jennifer is the one who got to knock on his door and then disappear, leaving Felicia's finger and a note saying where they could go for the rest of her. The loft is dark and silent, so it seems they took the bait. The large metal door doesn't have a lock and slides open easily. Chris goes in first, pointing his gun at every dark shadow until he's satisfied that the place is empty. It still doesn't exactly qualify as an ambush. The alphas will know they're there, from their scent and their heartbeats, so there's no point in hiding. Allison and Chris will be under some cover, in the loft, and Jennifer has her own methods for being undetectable. As soon as she enters, she stands towards the back of the room and gradually fades out of view. That means Stiles, Derek, Cora, and Tom are all going to be easy targets. Stiles positions them all slightly apart from each other, so they have room to fight. If it comes to that, he's hopeful that it won't. The first part of the plan goes absolutely without a hitch, which makes it the first time that has ever happened in his life. Ennis, clearly furious about Felicia's death, charges into the main room as soon as he realizes that there are people there. He goes for Stiles with fangs bared and a snarl on his lips, and takes a chest full of buckshot from Tom's shotgun. Within the confines of the small room, made mostly of stone and glass, the sound echoes and rolls. Even Stiles flinches away from it. Ennis staggers and goes to one knee, but then gets back to his feet with a roar. No sooner has he done so than he takes an arrow through the throat and a bullet through the head. The force of the bullet from Chris's rifle spins him halfway around and almost all the way across the room. This time he doesn't get back up. While all this is happening, the second predictable thing happens. JC, master of survival and protector of his own ass, again turns tail. He might want revenge, but he's clearly not going to stick around when there are people with guns who know how to use them. He gets two steps closer to the door when Fang, fully shifted, takes him by the throat, JC goes down with a howl that's abruptly cut off in a spray of red. Another arrow sings through the air, and Deucalion grabs it just before it can hit him in the neck. He half turns, smirking in Allison's direction, and then the head of the arrow explodes right in his face. He staggers, just slightly, taken off guard more by the noise and the acrid smell of smoke than anything else. Then he lunges forward with a roar, shifting as he goes. There's just the briefest moment of hesitation as his gaze swings between Derek and Stiles, trying to figure out who's who. And then he does something that Stiles didn't anticipate. He wheels towards the teenager and throws him out of the way. Stiles is okay in a fight, about on par with the average beta, but Deucalion's strength takes even him off guard. He slams into his father, sending them both sprawling, his baseball bat flying out of his hands and landing a few feet away. By the time he gets to his feet, he sees that Deucalion has Cora by the throat. Of course, the logical part of Stiles' brain thinks, if he can't figure out where Derek is going to be, going for Cora is a good alternative. Doing anything to her would kill Derek, and Deucalion obviously knows that. Even in his wolf form, the smirk on his face is plain to see. "You are tricky, Stiles. I will grant you that," he says, lifting Cora off her feet, dangling her above the ground. She chokes and kicks at him, to no avail. "And you've robbed me of my pack, which is problematic for me." He glances down at JC's body, then at Fang. "We are going to have words later, you and I." Fang snarls at him, where he's crouched down over JC's body, clearly unafraid. "Can't control me. I am not your pet." "Clearly," Deucalion says. "Please," Derek says, taking a step forward. "Let Cora go. Please don't hurt her." "Oh, I don't want to hurt her," Deucalion says. "I want her to live a long life, thinking about how you heroically sacrificed yourself for her." He shrugs one shoulder. "You, I just want to kill." "Okay." Derek lets out a breath. "Okay, Cora. It's okay." Cora strangles out an indecipherable plea, and Stiles grabs Derek by the hem of his shirt as he starts forward. "Derek, no!" he chokes out. "It's okay, Stiles." Derek's gaze is unfathomable. "Remember what you told us. You said you trusted us." "But..." Stiles protests, but then he stops cold, because he has a squirming, nagging feeling in the pit of his stomach that he knows what Derek's up to, and he hates it almost as much as the alternative. "How do you know he won't just kill you both?" "He won't," Derek says, looking back at Deucalion. "A quick, easy death would never satisfy him." Deucalion smiles. "You might just be smarter than your alpha, Derek. Come on now, if you're coming." Derek squeezes Stiles' hand, then drops it and walks forward. Stiles swallows hard as he watches him go, watches him lift his hands out in front of himself in surrender, watches him walk right over to Deucalion. The alpha lets Cora go, giving her a little toss so she lands in a heap beside Stiles and his abandoned bat. There's a split second when he's not holding either Hale, but it's just too short for anyone, even Chris Argent, to get a shot off. Deucalion is just too fast, too strong. He grabs Derek around the neck, gives Stiles one final smirk, and then claws a rend through the flesh. Derek goes to his knees, and then falls face down on the floor with his throat torn out. Except it isn't Derek. Stiles knows that because he knows Derek. He's bound to him. He can feel everything Derek feels. There's no pain, no rush of fear and then blank silence. His bond to Derek still emanates the same steady reassurance it always does. Allison in the balcony can feel the same thing. They both know that Derek is still alive,
that what they just saw was an illusion, no doubt courtesy of Jennifer Blake. But Cora doesn't. Cora isn't bound into their pack. She can't feel Derek the same way. And as she watches her brother fall, she launches herself back to her feet with a scream, grabbing Styles' baseball bat on her way up. And then there's that split second where Deucalion is vulnerable, where Derek has just left his hand and he's focused on his victory. And this time, that second is enough. The baseball bat catches him right upside the chin, and he goes, staggering. The silver wire bites into his skin, leaving red welts in its path, and he howls. Cora pivots neatly, bringing the bat down again hard in a move that Allison had taught her just the week before. It slams Deucalion down into the floor with enough force that pieces of the stone floor go flying everywhere in chips. Deucalion struggles to get back to his feet, but Cora is still screaming as she brings the bat down again on his face. Cora! It's Derek's voice as he emerges from the shadows of the loft, whole and intact and fine. Even knowing he hadn't been hurt, Styles feels a well of relief at the sight. Cora, it's okay. I'm okay. It takes a minute for Derek's voice to penetrate Cora's rage as she continues to beat Deucalion to a pulp with the baseball bat. When she finally looks up, her face is splattered with blood and her eyes are shining crimson. I'm okay, Derek says, holding his arms out to her. Cora, I'm okay. I'm fine. I'm okay. With a noise that's somewhere between a sob and a scream, Cora drops the bat. It hits the floor with a clatter, and she stumbles into Derek's arms. He hugs her as tightly as he can, lifting her off the floor a little, and murmuring reassurances into her ear. Styles looks down at Deucalion's body, and thinks that he never could have predicted that. He's all right, Tom chokes out, his eyes wide as they track between dead Derek and living Derek. Styles nods a little and jerks his chin towards Jennifer, who's leaning against the wall of glass. He gave her a hair when I wasn't looking. Right, Dare? I'm sorry, Derek says, smoothing down Cora's hair as she sobs into his chest. I just thought. You thought my plan was stupid, Styles says, and Derek looks a little chagrined, but nods. Styles sighs. Yeah, he says. You were probably right. Jesus, Tom says. He's pale and a little shaky, and surprises Derek by getting an arm around him and hugging him tightly, though without making him let go of Cora. Derek leans into the embrace. Sorry, Dad, Styles says. I would have said something, but if Duke had caught on to the ruse... Yeah, I get it, his father says. Doesn't mean I like it, but I get it. I'm just glad he's all right. He gets an elbow around Styles' shoulders and pulls him in so all four of them are in the hug, and Styles leans into it, and he stands there for a long time.